Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Blood on the Bloom, episode 103. Continuing our outfield preview for the 2024 fantasy baseball season, going ADPs 21 through 40-ish. See how far things go as time permits. And we'll wrap it up on Thursday with part three, get you, down the list pretty good, and much, much more. But before we do all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDNchick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on the Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan, how we doing, my friend?
Dude.
What a day.
What a day.
Look at us.
doing fantastic. For those who don't know, we are a finalist somehow for the Baseball Podcast of the Year for 2023, which is just mind-blowing. We got that from the FSWA, the Fantasy Sports Writers Association. I guess around noon today. I was out and about around lunchtime and I wasn't on my phone and I checked it and saw your text with some profanities in there, profanities from excitement, as well as a couple other things. So it was just really cool to see that and be a finalist. I mean, it's amongst some like pretty freaking.
We're in a league of our own, basically.
Heavy hitters, yeah. It's I've got the list here. The finalists are the Sleeper and the Bust, Roto World, Roto Wire, Pitcher List, Rates and Barrels, the Tool Shed.
And then us.
but no, it's awesome. I think it's a testament to the stuff that we've been doing these 2 years. I know people probably don't want to just hear us sit and pat our own backs, but I think it's worthy of a cheers, my friend, to you. Got a couple beers cheers, down here. Friends. You got your noon. I won't steal all your thunder, but just a really cool day to not only just get the recognition, I know you're going to kind of talk about this too, but just to hear from everybody throughout the day has been really freaking sweet. So thank you to everyone who has supported the show, reached out today, asked questions, been in the chat, like our friend Alan DeLeonardis is right now. We really appreciate everything. And yeah, I feel like this is only the beginning, man.
Yeah, no, I got to try to say without sounding too sappy and silly on all this because it's not even an acceptance speech, but I feel like
we haven't even won anything.
No, but I feel like we won just doing this. Like I didn't expect to get nominated because I've never had been nominated before. I don't expect to win. Like if we win, God forbid what we do on this show. Like it might be a wild one if that were to take place. But yeah, I don't plan on winning, but I just want to. It's just I'm trying to figure out the right words here. I guess when people ask me why I'm crazy enough to record as many shows as I record, and I say it's because I like to do it, when a thing like that comes across, that makes it well worth it. Like that's kind of like the acknowledgement from your peers, basically. Like we do this for the listeners. All the comments, text messages, DMs have been more than amazing. Like that keeps the train rolling in a big, big way. But to like going back to our New Year's resolutions, when I kind of mentioned like the whole analyst thing, getting a nomination is like a step in that direction. Like that's like a, hey, you guys are actually pretty good at this. So it's pretty awesome. I'm not one that likes to sit there, like you said, pat our backs. It's not my thing, but it's one of those all day today. It was just kind of like a, what the heck is going on thing. And next thing you know, there's another text message. There's a DM. There's, like I said, messages on Twitter. I just didn't stop. And you guys are amazing. And we do it because of you guys. But we also do it because we like to work together. And I couldn't do it without Ryan. So that is Bubba and the Bloom. So it's kind of it's a great yin and yang situation here. It works well together. We've heard a lot of compliments for that. And it's been a day that's been really, really awesome. And you don't get me speechless very often. So I'm trying to get through this. But it's an accomplishment that I did not expect. Even some people that know me very well, because I do have chips on my shoulder, messaged me today. And they said, it's about damn time. That's all they said. And I'm like, it means a lot to me is all I'm trying to say.
Well said. Didn't get too sappy either. So well said. But yeah, the episode that we submitted, just quick peek behind the curtain, was our, I think pretty popular ADP Pockets episode. We did a series of like, this was back in draft season.
We'll do them again this year.
And we will do them again this year. Yeah, absolutely. After our position previews are done, we'll go back through the player pool in the middle round. So like ADP 100 to 150, 150 to 200, 200 to 250, all the way up. It was ADP 200 to 250 episode last year that we submitted and got nominated. So, I don't know. I think that's all I have to say about it without getting too repetitive. But yeah, a couple adult beverages with us as we do Outfield Part 2 tonight, just because we gotta celebrate these little moments. They don't come across that often.
No, they don't. So I'm pretty pumped on it. And let's not forget the fact that Ryan also got nominated for another award for his amazing writing this year. So you have two of them behind you, or just one? It's two, right? You have two of them back there?
Got two trophies over there.
Yeah, that's that. So in reality, Ryan could have four by the end of all this. So let's just let's root for that. Let's root for the big one here. That's where the fun begins. And I'll pay for the second one for the Love and the Bloom. So I'll get a shelf to put back here if I have to have that bad boy up there.
We don't want you to upgrade your setup too much here, man.
Yeah, like, God forbid.
You got to keep Will Clark. You don't want to give him any competition behind you.
No, he gets pissy. So we're not going to do that. But yeah, don't forget Ryan. Awesome writing stuff as well. Nominated once again. It's like a year in, year out thing. So hopefully award number three coming through. So yeah, that's where Ryan gets quiet. All right, let's go to the listener leagues. We mentioned last week, we're kind of waiting to see how things are going. Things got better over the weekend. We can say we will for sure. We still need signups to make this happen. We're going to tweet it out tomorrow because we were going to tweet it out last week. The world kind of shut down for a second in the NFBC world. They're back. We've talked to the guys. We're going to have at least four leagues set up. Individual prize pools, $50 entries. And there will be an overall, remember, there's no overall financial prize. But if we fill at least four leagues, which I think we will, there will be a prize which we will announce on the show that we will take care of and send to the winner. So those will be happening. Now, couple quick things. I'll pass it off to you. If you want to give us your email address, that works out. If not, I'm going to create a survey on Google, whatever Google survey thing they call it these days. And
forms,
forms. Yeah, most of you guys DM'd us your information, so we'll send you the link to the forms. There will be four dates to pick from, Ryan.
And we've confirmed the four dates with Greg Ambrosius at the NFBC. So it's going to be, we tried to split these up like different days of the week, different times to placate the East Coasters, the West Coasters, whatever. The four dates are February 19th at 5 p.m. Eastern, February 23rd at 5 p.m. Eastern, February 26th at 8 p.m. Eastern, and February 28th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Either Bubba or myself will be in one of those drafts. We're not going to do the same league. We're going to split it up to do two each. We won't tell you who's in which one yet. We don't want to give, you know, everyone jumping in my league with the with the advantage over me. But those are the four dates that we're going to try and kind of put everyone into a date that works for them. But yes, be on the lookout for a survey, likely sometime on Wednesday from us, where you'll just enter your info. We'll send it to you, and you can tell us which dates do not work for you.
Like, rank them one through four if you can, because we have to be flexible people. Just remember that.
Hey, man, you gotta see if the survey can do that. Can't promise functionality here.
I'll talk to some people. There's some people that can figure it out. And out of the four dates, I might have missed this, Ryan. I apologize. Two are at 8 p.m. Eastern, and two, I believe, are at 5 p.m. Eastern. So that also flexibility there for you as well, trying to make it work on different time frames also. So we'll have those out to you here in the next couple of days as I'll work on that. It's supposed to be raining here for the rest of the week, so I'll have a little extra time on my hands. I'll take care of that for you and send that your way, and we'll get those signed up. Thanks for all the people that have already signed up. Thanks for all the ratings and reviews. It's been awesome. So, again, kind of how we started the show. You guys are awesome. Thank you for everything. Now, I don't have anything else, Ryan, except outfields. Let's start off with outfielder 21. We left off last week, top 20, talking about how things start to drop off pretty quickly. You want to get at least a couple of those guys pretty early. ADP 95. We're not even out of the top 100 yet. We kick it off with Schwarbaum's Kyle Schwarber. And we kind of all know the narrative if you play baseball or fantasy baseball enough. Power, ridiculous. 47 homers, back-to-back 46 or more home run seasons. 108 runs scored, 104 RBIs, zero steals, which is weird from the drop-off from 2022. But the conundrum, you get .197. So how do you make that work with your team? Ryan, what are your thoughts on Schwarbaum's? Because, you know, he's an amazing three-category stud. If he can steal 10 bases, I call it four categories. But when you look at everything else, it's a little rough.
It is, and it's, and this is an entirely team construction pick, which I know like is always kind of a lazy answer, but I put out a tweet earlier this week, a Bloomboard earlier this week, looking at hitters who had a certain ADP this time last year, outperformed that ADP, and then yet have still dropped in ADP compared to last year. So Kyle Schwarber's the top one on that list. Kyle Schwarber had a 61 ADP last year. He finished in 5x5 leagues 38th overall, even with that sub 200 batting average, Bubba, that you mentioned. Finished 38th last year and has an ADP now of 95. So like from a pure valuation standpoint, that makes no sense. Makes no sense at all that Kyle Schwarber, A, has even dropped, or B, should even, I mean, he should be going up in ADP. The problem with Schwarber is, and I'll say probably say balance 50 times on the show tonight, but you need to get someone with batting average and stolen bases to counteract that and to balance that out. And that's the problem with Schwarber. There just are not many players in the player pool that are high batting average and high stolen base at the same time. So it's just something to keep in mind with Schwarber. Like the batting average is going to kill you. The stolen bases are going to kill you. But from a valuation standpoint, it works. So you just need to be mindful of that when you're constructing your team. OBP leagues, Kyle Schwarber's a fantastic early round pick. I took Schwarber in the third round of Tout Wars OBP last year and was very happy with that. So Schwarber can definitely make some sense. And one interesting thing, we didn't kind of do like a macro level of this, of outfielders 21 through 50. There's not much power in the outfield from 21 to 50. There are only like four guys projected by ATC to hit over 25 home runs. And so like power is an issue for me, at least, and I've experienced this in my draft with this stage of the outfield, and Kyle Schwarber can certainly, with a 41 home run projection, make that a lot easier to manage. So it's a tough call, but you just have to be able to make the pieces work with Mr. Schwarber.
Yeah, you got to get some batting average assets, and the suggestion I would give is get batting average assets early. That's why I like the Freemans of the world and those guys. Don't rely on Luis Arraez to be your batting average asset. We talked about talked about that on the middle infielders.
12 minutes in, and we've got Arraez slander. What are we doing, man?
It's because he's the rabbit version of batting average. Release those other guys early on, provide other categories. That's where I was going with this. So don't rely on a one-trick pony to help you build your batting average back up. All right, Lane Thomas, ADP of 114 right now. We got last year 28 home runs, 20 stolen bases, 268 average, scored 101 runs. Big coming out party for Lane Thomas playing in 157 games. The question is, can he repeat that this year? And I got people saying the step back is coming from Lane Thomas, and I think that's understandable. That's expected maybe in all things considered, but still could be a good player that helps you out in 4 to 5 categories at this point in the draft.
That's where I think I'm at too. And actually Lauren Auerbach laid the case out for Lane Thomas quite well in your Bench with Bubba Nationals team preview. She did a great job on that, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I think you are buying Lane Thomas coming off of a career year. He's not repeating what we saw last year, especially batting average. And I have concerns about the power, and he's probably not repeating that sky high plate appearance total either. That said, this is a nice, pretty balanced piece from a projection standpoint. Where is he at? Thomas is a little bit behind. He's the 78th hitter in terms of projection, 63rd going off the board. So he's a little bit behind, but that's factoring in some good pullback. And again, you get that balance. So if you need steals and you don't want to go rabbit hunting for Esteri Ruiz two rounds later, I think you can piece it together with Lane Thomas and a few other kind of later speed guys that we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yeah, I can definitely see that as an option. Like I said, not big on Lane. I think if you kind of missed out on enough outfielders in the first 20, then Lane maybe fits the mold a little bit. But I agree, there are some guys we're going to talk about later on that give you a little more 4 to 5 category appeal still. Not a ton of power per se, but I don't think Lane's going to have that power either.
Yep.
Seiya Suzuki has about the same ADP of around 114. This is a guy I believe you're pretty high on, and I don't disagree with you. 20 home runs, Six stolen bases, 285 last year, 75 and 74. Battling injuries, especially early in the year. So I'll let you have the floor on Seiya, because I know, pretty sure you were one of the ones that's a fan of his.
Big fan. Seiya is probably my favorite buy of any outfielder on this list, actually. So I'll stick my neck out that far. I think we had a listener question on Suzuki either last episode or two episodes ago, so I won't totally rehash everything I just said, but the projections love Suzuki. He's a 47th hitter projected at the end of the year by HQ and the Bat X, which is out publicly. You should check that out on Fangraphs, and the 61st hitter off the board. I think, and that's projections even taking into account, say, Suzuki's first half when he missed time with an oblique injury and a neck injury. I think we saw the more Suzuki version in the second half last year, which was just an elite hitter. I think, yes, health is a little bit of an issue over Suzuki's first two seasons, but the skills are absolutely there. I think Seiya Suzuki could be like a fourth or fifth round pick this time next year. I think he's really good.
Yeah, I'm starting to believe in that. If the steals can get up to like the 15 number, which maybe could because of the oblique injury in the first half, that could be fun, which could also be lead to 30-ish home runs, give or take. So there's a lot to like there. I know over this past week, I had a lot of underdog drafts while I was hanging out watching football and whatnot. And Seiya was a big target of mine in those drafts. I think there's a lot to like with him, and it's because he got OBP skills too, which in those formats work really, really well. So I'll throw some underdog nuggets out there once, because I've been spending a lot of time in those streets lately, kind of trying not to enter every NFBC league. So I've been doing those instead, and it's been a nice little change of pace for the eyes on the different stats you're looking at.
It's like your Nicorette. As you
pretty much. Yeah, I got my patch on. It's called the underdog.
It's called $3 underdogs.
Yeah, $3 underdog. It's called the bunt. It's the bunt. I'm playing small ball right now, boys. Just trying to inch that last run home.
It's been a long winter for Bubba.
Yeah, it's cooped up around here. Nick Castellanos also ADP around 114. So it's kind of fun. You got Thomas, Suzuki, Castellanos all going pretty much within a pick or two of each other, depending on what draft you're in right now. And Casty is a fun one because last year, really strong year, 272, 29 homers, 11 steals, 106 RBIs. Year before that was his first year in Philly in 2022, 13 homers, 7 steals, 263. Not the Casty we all knew he could be. I think we were pretty optimistic on a much better Casty year last year. Did really well. Postseason Casty was amazing. That was great. So it just kind of makes you like, is he in between the two seasons? Do we see another strong season from Cassie? It's kind of what you're looking at here. So what's your thoughts on Cassie? Because I still like him a lot. I prefer Seiya, of course. But like as you keep going down this outfielder rabbit hole, Cassie does kind of stand out above some of these other guys we're about to talk about.
Yeah, I'm not ending up with Cassie anywhere just because I like Suzuki better and Lane Thomas, I think. The issue I have, and this is, I don't really have this like backed by any kind of data. It's more just like a gut feel. I really worry about the plate approach as Castellanos gets older. The strikeout rate ticked back up last year. Castellanos had a 20% swinging strike rate last season, which is like terrible. I mean, the league average on that is 12%. Very few hitters whiff at basically one every five pitches. And I just worry about like Javi Baez 2.0, where you just get this like crazy aggressive plate approach, and I don't think that ages very well. And Castellanos, I think, is entering his age 32 season. Yes, 32. So I worry about the plate approach and the batting average going forward. That said, I think the homers and steals are there. The lineup's good. The projection ATC for Castellanos, 25 bombs, 8 steals. Like I feel like that's attainable, and that's actually like right in line with Seiya Suzuki. I just think the floor could bottom out under Casty pretty quickly as he ages with that approach. But again, I don't have anything to like firmly back that up. It's more of just a hunch call. But I get some Javi Baez vibes, and you don't really want Javi Baez vibes.
Nope. No, you don't. Nope. You don't want Javi Baez vibes. The only, like, I guess, devil's advocate I'll put there is, yes, there are concerns in that regard, but on this team, like, man, if he's even hits 250, the run production could be tremendous in this lineup. So,
oh yeah,
yes. Unlike Javi, or that's just 250 in Detroit. Yeah, might as well hit 220 at that point. But
that's Zach Gelof level RBI totals down there.
Yeah. So, I'll put money on Goff having more power and speed than Cassie, though. But we got that going. That's a whole other bet show coming down the road, folks. Jordan Walker, ADP of 124. This guy is quite the enigma these days. Hit 276 last year, 16 homers, 7 steals. Early in the year was getting yo-yoed between the bigs and the minors. Kind of got a run towards the end, but some people are very optimistic about him. I've always been kind of just off him. I need to see it. Matt Thompson laid out a great bit of info on him on the Cardinals preview that dropped on Tuesday. So what's your thoughts on Jordan Walker? Because after hearing Matt talk, who follows them very closely, it really kind of backed up my idea of not going near Jordan Walker.
Okay. Yeah, because I have not listened to that episode yet, but basically, Matt knows his
record. Basically, he said he's way too much of a ground ball guy and like a line drive hitter. He's not a power bat.
Makes sense. And I think this was on Rates and Barrels as well recently. He's playing out of position too.
That's the other thing. Yes.
And that I think that does affect you as a hitter. And again, like the classic, we want to see it first before we draft him type approach that both of us kind of subscribe to, even in these more middle rounds. I like a few more proven track record guys going later that we'll talk about, like a Teoscar, Springer, Santander type. Over at Jordan Walker, fully knowing this is a top five fantasy prospect who's like 23 years old, could break out. But yeah, we both need to see it first.
Basically what Matt was saying, I could be a little lost, so listen to the show if you guys want. He thinks about another year and then he'll be in on a guy like Jordan Walker. He just needs to develop more because right now the power swing's not there. And a lot of it, like you said, with Rates and Barrels, he says he's out of position. In a perfect world, like he wants Goldie back after this year. He's a free agent after this year. If he leaves, Walker goes right over to first. Things make it a lot better in that regard type situation. So just a young player. That's what it is. A young player still developing. So I think it feels like people are kind of getting ahead of the horse on this one. And putting the cart ahead of the horse thing, you know, the old sayings. And that's kind of where people are getting in trouble with Walker. Could he break out? Sure. Like you mentioned, the Bad X just came out with their projections. They're much lower on Walker compared to most other projection sites. So to each their own, every projection's got their differences, but it's kind of fun being able to see the differences between each projection now, because at least it makes you kind of question things and look at it some more. That stood out quite a bit. Estuary Ruiz, I think this might be a quickie here, but 254 last year, 5 homers, 67 stolen bases. You mentioned those Zach Gelhoff run production numbers. Ruiz, like, hit 254, which is pretty good. Stole 67 bags, really good. Scored 47 runs and drove in 47. Like, that is dreadful. He's basically a one and a half category guy, because the average is okay. It's respectable. And you're drafting him at an ADP of 125. Like, I just go right past him on draft day.
Yeah, I think if you take Ruiz at this point, I think you done messed up. Yeah. Unless your plan is to go Kyle Schwarber, Ruiz, and then Luis Arraez. How about that to piece together some category balance? We had a question last week from Calling My Shot about Ruiz and these types of kind of one category guys, and made this point last week, so I'll be quick here. It's just like, Ruiz, I had Ruiz on a couple of draft and hold teams last year, and I just could not even use him. I was so far ahead in stolen bases. I had Acuna, some other guys that, like, and this is the case with these speed only types, like, he could steal 80 bases for you next year. Chances are, if you're first in your standings, half of those stolen bases are completely meaningless to you in your standings, even though it counts towards, you know, the valuation, that sort of thing. So, I'd have to be really, really down bad for some stolen bases to take Ruiz. And even if I was, I'd rather punt steals than do an all eggs in one basket thing with Ruiz.
Ditto. Spencer Steer, ADP 127. We talked about him before, multi-position all over the place. One reason why he's getting drafted this high right now. Still a very good player. Still actually projects to play pretty regularly in the outfield the way they have their setup. So still good. I just don't know if I can take 127. If you want to add to it now, you can. But like, really good numbers, a little bit of everything. But I don't know if I can take that ADP.
Yeah, and I think this is more of just a draft and hold multi-position inflation. I think as fab leagues come, you have a little bit more roster flexibility in season. Spencer Steer is going to go down a little bit. I just the skills and the projections, I don't think, are on par with really anyone going around him. I think you're paying too much of a premium for that multi-position eligibility with Steer. So,
yep, 100%. George Springer, ADP of 128, coming off a monster year for George Springer for many reasons. He hit 258. That's kind of actually down compared to usual, but 21 homers for the third straight year, 20 stolen bases, a career high. So he went 20-20, played in 154 games, most since 2016, 87 runs and 72 RBIs. The dude's going to be 34 this year. I just can't believe he does this again, Ryan.
Springer, honestly, and this has been my guy the last like 3 years. I've taken Springer, I think like third round in some drafts, as recent as a couple years ago. One of the harder ones for me to get my thumb on this year, because yes, you're right. Like the 154 whatever games that you just said, Bubba. Like on the one hand, there's no way he can repeat that, right?
It's gonna be tough.
I mean, he did just do it. He did just do it. So that counts for something. And George Springer in 2022 did have 579 plate appearances. But it's still like, it's just a career of injuries that have me having a hard time believing that. On the other hand, however, George Springer absolutely took advantage of the stolen base rules, had a little bit of a more greener light, still plenty successful on the base pass. Like, I think he can steal 15-20. And I think most importantly, he's going to lead off again for Toronto. And I think Toronto, they just signed Justin Turner. I think that lineup's going to be a lot better than what we saw in 2023. And that's going to boost George Springer's counting stats. So Springer is very tough for me to evaluate. The projections, for what it's worth, have Springer 15 slots ahead of where he's going in ADP. And I feel like the projections on Springer can be pretty accurate, because we do know who this guy is. So I lean towards taking a shot on Springer, fully knowing I don't think we're going to get what we got last year.
Yeah, it's fair. I just worried about that step back. Like a fun game would be who finishes better on the player rater, Lane Thomas or George Springer. I know that they're going 14 picks apart. Like, that's an interesting,
really good comp. I mean, that's like the same dude.
Yeah, that's what I'm like. If do you wait on Lane Thomas and go to Springer, hoping Springer can stay there, or do you think Lane Thomas stays healthy enough to beat out George Springer? That kind of scenario, which is interesting. Maybe just pass on both. Who knows? It's hard for me to take George Springer when you get Teoscar Hernandez at 141. Yeah. This is a guy, like you hinted at him earlier. I'm mad he signed already. I don't care that he signed with the Dodgers. That sucks, obviously, but I liked him in the free agent limbo because I was snagging him up everywhere. 258 average, 26 home runs, 7 steals last year, 93 RBIs for Seattle, which is pretty solid. Dude's been like a 25-plus home run dude. The counting stats have been good. Stolen bases, it's usually 6 or 7. Hits for a decent average. Like, I love everything about him. He's 31. He's younger than George Springer. And now he's going to be in that middle of that Dodgers order. And people will say, platoon. No, he's not platooning, folks. Like, he's playing baseball most of the time. So I love Teoscar. I'm surprised this ADP actually hasn't gone higher.
Yeah, and this is pretty recent ADP. This is all January. I forget exactly when he signed with LA, but I'm pretty confident this price of 141 for Teoscar reflects the LA version of him. I love Teoscar at this price, so I won't echo what you just said. The only thing I'll add, Bubba, is I mentioned the lack of power at outfield. I feel like Teoscar is one of the few outfielders here that can get you some pretty, I don't want to say elite power. I don't think this is like peak Teoscar that we saw a couple years ago with Toronto, but I feel like can get you very good power without hurting batting average and even pop a few steals. So I think that's important too when you're looking at outfield and even the market at a macro level, is power dries up quicker than you think, or at least quicker than I thought. And Teoscar really stands out. We'll talk about Santana in just a second. He's in this group as well, as a pretty stable power bat, and there aren't that many available in outfield right now.
Nope, there are not. And since we took this ADP around like early January, Teoscar has gone as high as 114. So he's moving up. It's between 114 and 149. So probably more towards the top half.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and that's more reasonable. Like 141 is just silly. We're talking like a 2-round bump almost. So.
All right, so how about to go to our 114 crew? That's quite the number. We have three guys: Teoscar versus Castellanos. They have the exact, not exact same, but very similar ATC projection. Who are you going there?
I go Teoscar.
I think so too.
I think so too. I like Casty. I don't mind Casty, but I agree with you. If you got to pick a guy that might has a better chance of falling off, it's Casty.
Agreed.
So I'll take Teoscar.
Yep.
So no bet, friend. Sorry, no bet. Evan Carter, the man that took October by storm in Texas, almost November, didn't quite get there. But Evan Carter, ADP of 143 over the last couple weeks here, hit 306 in 23 games with the Rangers, 5 homers, 3 steals, played great, struck out a ton. There could be platoon situations with Evan Carter. I've just been a pass on Carter. I don't know about you.
There will be platoon situations with Evan Carter. This is the famous Chris Blessing stat that Evan Carter had one extra base hit against lefties last year, not just in the majors. One hit against lefties all season for Evan Carter. So, like, I feel like a platoon is absolutely happening. I also think, like, this is a guy who is at this point in his career a better real baseball player than fantasy. He gets lauded for this, like, patient plate approach. And, full count Carter was a thing in the postseason. But, like, being able to work counts and draw walks and be passive, it's the Juan Soto disease. It's far more valuable in real life than fantasy. I just think Evan Carter is like way overpriced. So yep. I'm not touching him.
I'm with you. No Evan Carter for me. I've been passing on that one left and right because there's a couple guys coming up here we're going to talk about. I like the next three guys, honestly. Like I'm in on all of them. We'll start with Anthony Santander, ADP of 145, going right after Evan Carter. And dude hit 257 last year. Best average was 2020, 2019. He hit 28 home runs, switch hitting, doesn't affect him in that ballpark. That's back-to-back 28-33 home run seasons. Got 5 steals with the new saves or steals rule, which is big. Runs in RBI. The dude just keeps getting better and better. He's only going to be 29 this year, hitting the middle of that Baltimore Orioles order. I think he could be even better this year, potentially, like as a overall category player in Roto. I think he's a really good price tag at 145.
Agreed. Echo everything you said, and the points that I made with Teoscar, it's that stable power bet, and there are not many of them. So I'll try not to repeat myself too much, but Santander absolutely fits that mold. Trying to fish for bets, man. Santander, Teoscar, right next to each other.
That's a really tough one.
I don't have a strong feel either way, to be honest.
I'd probably say Teoscar because of the team context, just overall team context, but man, like the younger Santander, there could be a whole other level. Like I think there's more power with Santander,
yes,
than Teoscar. So it comes down to counting stats in the end.
And honestly, man, honestly, team context might be a
Orioles
watch.
Are very good. Orioles are very good, but let's be real. Like the Dodgers should be murderer's row. It should be like the Dodgers should be doing what the Braves did last year.
Half of the Dodgers. I'll push back on that. Half of the Dodgers. If Teoscar hits like 7th.
Yeah, I think he hits in the middle of the order.
You're hitting around Muncy, Outman, Hayward, Lux. Like, I don't know. But maybe it's higher than that. I don't know.
That's. I think he hits 4 or 5, honestly. But we'll see. Yeah.
I mean, Santander last year had 95 RBI. And only hit 257, 28 homers. Like that's really good. Really
if you good want the ceiling contest. Play, you take Santander, I think.
Yeah. That's, I mean, they're both fine at the price, yeah. I think.
Do you take Santander over Casty?
Yeah, I think I would. Yeah. I mean, straight up, I think it's close. But once you factor in a 30-pick difference,
yeah,
I'm passing on Casty and taking Teoscar Santander.
Yep, no, that's fair. I think Santander's got – it's interesting, like – that's Teoscar, Santander right there. If you can have a double tap at some point and or push one up type thing, that's a nice little sweet spot to get some later power from maybe your third and fourth outfielder or fourth and fifth outfielder. Like, depending on your aggressiveness at outfield, that's a great way to pencil in like 50 home runs, 255, and runs and RBIs total of like close to 400 between the two. Like that's maybe 15 to 20 steals combined. Like that's a really good like third, fourth outfield type idea. Just going to throw it out there. All right, TJ Friedl. Love me, TJ. 151 ADP. I'll try not to steal your thunder this time, but 279 average, 18 homers, 27 steals last year, leading off pretty much primarily for Cincy. Even got to bat against lefties as the season went on, which was nice to see. I'll let you have the floor before I say anything else on TJ because I like him, but I know there's some things that hesitation is fine.
Yeah, you're probably higher on TJ than I am. I like him. I think he's a decent stolen base source, but I think Friedl is due for some pretty serious
power fallback.
This is what I was waiting for you to go to. That's what I was
like. He had 13 home runs. No, I got this wrong. He had
17.
What the hell did he have?
18.
Where's my damn tweet?
18 home runs.
18 home runs on 13 barrels. That's the highest home run to barrel rate in all of baseball. And yes, he did pull a good number of those barrels. Yes, he is in Great American Small Park. But like, there's, you could make the case there's like very, very little power here, and Friedel may struggle to reach double digit home runs. I know that's well below the projected 16 homers by ADP. I worry about that. And then I worry about, the batting average fallback, like ATC projecting 260. I feel like, he's fine. He's fine. I think he's going to play. The glove's really good, and that lineup's going to be really good. I just think the only thing you can kind of hang your hat on is the stolen bases. And I think there's there's a pretty low floor for batting average and home runs.
Yeah. And to back your point, remember we talked about this at FPAS with Friedel at home, 13 home runs, 14 steals, 291 average. On the road, 5 home runs, 13 steals, 267 average. So steals are just fine, as you mentioned, but quite the gap in power and batting average, depending on where he was playing baseball. So something to definitely keep in mind with Friedel. Like, I like him because he's going to be leading off, and it looks like he's out of the platoon situation. Fraley's on the bench, so there is something to like there. But I agree, there is concern that there could be a step back if things don't click like they did this last year.
The last thing I'll add to, and we'll get to these guys, but there are several other stolen base sources going
pretty soon
in the next round that we'll get to.
But. Yep, 100%. That's a fair point. If you're drafting Friedel for mainly his steals upside, yeah, there's guys coming up. You could do that and wait about a round or two, as you mentioned. Ian Happ, another guy I'm very high on this year. ADP of 151, same as TJ Friedel. I take Happ over Friedel, tell you that much. 248 last year, 21 homers, 14 steals. We've talked about Happ a few times. It's like, you look at his year-to-year productions. He either hits for average and sells out power. Like, it's a vice versa thing. Like, which one's he going to do? Which one's he going to do? Last year, he got a little bit of both, kind of. Like, the average really stunk, but he stole more. Run production was up. It's kind of he walked a boatload more. It's like, which guy are we going to get with Ian Happ? In the end, I think it's a pretty good ball player that has the ability to go off if things like really go well. But there's also the floor we've seen with Ian Happ, which could be scary. So what's your thoughts on Happ?
Yeah, he's a weird dude. Mm-hmm. Coffee guy, Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, we call.
Like, weird in terms of, you just mentioned it. You know the production's going to be there, but you just don't know where it's going
to
come from.
Like, when you're trying to balance your stats on your team, yes. Which one am I counting on?
Right, because we've had years of Ian Happ. In 2021, he hit 226, but he popped 25 homers with 9 steals. The next year, he hit 271, but only 17 homers. And then kind of split the difference last year, 248 with 21 homers. So he's always like in terms of like 5x5 dollar value, like he's always good at this price, like around 18, 20 bucks. But it's just like, is it going to come from batting average or homers or steals or where? But it's going to come, I think. So I'm fine with Ian Happ. He is a playing time monster. He's got that Marcus Semien in him where he just does not take days off. And I do think that's valuable, repeatable, et cetera, et cetera. So the projections are just kind of hedging like the midpoint of these wild batting average and homer and stolen base swings, which is about all they can do. But he's going to play every day. Cubs are going to be a pretty good lineup, even if, you know, if they do sign Bellinger, that only helps. And I would take Happ over Friedel. Yep. I would. Yep.
And all signs point, unless something crazy happens, which can with Scott Boras, looks like Bellinger will end up going back to the Cubs. It's kind of the land.
What it seems like.
That's kind of the reports that came out even after like Justin Turner signed with Toronto. It's pretty much the only real suitor left is Chicago. And Boras just does Boras things, waits till the end to suck every last dollar out of every team he can before he signs, which it's his job. But that's all Bellinger's waiting for, it feels like. All right, Jackson Chirio, ADP of 152. Got the extension from the Brewers. Means he should start with the big club this year. We'll see. Projection signs aren't that optimistic on that, though. So we'll see how that goes out. Double A, he 22 homers, 43 steals at 280. Did okay in 6 games in AAA, but it was mainly those double A stats that just jumped off the page. I just pass because it's our old philosophy, Ryan, got to see it to believe it thing. What's your thoughts on Jackson Chirillo?
Yeah, for fear of angering new follower, we both got a follow after getting this award nomination thing. Jackson Chirillo's meat hammer. So a lot of ways you can go with that one.
Yep.
We don't want to offend
Mr. Hammer.
Mr. Hammer. But yeah, I mean, it's bad to say I'm out, but it's because he is an immense talent. Actually the projections. So you did mention the projections. If I give Jackson Chirillo like 600 plate appearances, the playing time projection is well under that you'll see like on Fangraphs. He actually comes out well ahead of his ADP. But like, I don't think the projections have any idea what Jackson Chirillo is going to do this year. He's going to be 20 years old facing MLB pitching for the first time. It's just someone who, like, I don't know. Like I said, neither of us, we want to see it first. We get burned by that. Sometimes I know you're writing an article for Fantasy Pros right now where you're looking back at last year's ADP. And there was we were talking about this before the show, but there was Corbin Carroll in like the fourth middle or fifth round.
Middle of the fifth, ADP at 55.
We wanted to see it last year and I don't want to say we got burned by it because we didn't but we just missed out. And so that could very well happen with Jackson Chirillo, who, I mean, I agree he's going to start on opening day, but it's just someone like both of us are, it's just not the profile we take. Again, fully knowing. So I think I put a note when I was prepping here. I probably said the exact same thing about Ronald Acuna. Before Acuna's rookie season, and his ADP was in about the ninth or 10th round. Said the exact same thing that I just said and missed out big time. So there's that, but it's just not something I draft for.
Yeah, as Rico says, the bad X hates Chirillo. Yeah, they have him for like 116 games. And there's like something to that, because just because he got the extension doesn't mean they can't send him to AAA. Like if they have Garrett Mitchell, they have Sal Frelick, they have options there. He's going to get every opportunity to produce. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not saying first slip up he goes, but they don't have to. If they want to say, because he played six games in AAA, maybe like, hey, go run down there some more, kid, get some confidence, work on something, whatever. We'll see. I don't see that happening, but it is an option. Let's just say it is an option. Ask John Singleton how that went. Trio's better than Singleton. Don't take that out of context, Mr. Hammer, but just saying that that is a play.
John Singleton, Jackson Chirillo comp. Didn't think we'd go there, but
John Singleton, or Scott Kingery, does that work for you?
That works.
Yeah, that works. That's got stings.
Let's stop pissing off the meat hammer,
the Mr. Hammer. Jorge Soler, unsigned Jorge Soler. A lot of teams are rumored to be getting some Jorge Soler, but right now he's got an ADP of 160, which is kind of juicy if you think he's going to sign somewhere nice, because it's kind of how you felt about Teoscar at one time. Now Justin that starts Turner. Yeah, Justin Turner.
Yesterday. The
second Soler signs, things start to creep. Dude hit 36 jacks last year, hit 250. Like, sign me up for that. And that was in Miami. Like, sign me up on that on pretty much any offense. So what's your thoughts on Soler, who's a guy I have been circling a lot on draft boards?
Oh, this is absolutely juicy. I think you need to jump on this like as quick as you can.
Earmuffs, Mr. Hammer.
Yes. Because Jorge Soler is going to sign and he's going to play. This is all just my opinion, but he's good enough. The projections, every projection system has Jorge Soler for real life value. And what I use for that is a stat WRC+. Where your league average is about 100. It factors in like on base rate and like the value of doubles and power and that sort of thing. It's a good real life value statistic. And Jorge Soler is like 124, 120 by basically every projection system. Basically meaning he's a very good real life player. He's going to sign, he's going to play, and I think he's going to mash. This is 40 home run power. No, Jorge Soler is not going to hit 250 again. I don't think it's more like 230, 240. But at 160, this isn't like a Kyle Schwarber at 95. At 160, you can kind of work with that. And I just think once Jorge Soler signs, this ADP will go from 160 to like 130, 140, something like that. Again, I'll make that repetitive point that there are not many power bats available at this point. And so Jorge Soler to me is like, this is the time to get him.
Yeah. And then if you're doing redrafts, I really love Jorge Soler, because God forbid he goes to a bad team or he goes and somehow they're going to platoon him or something, it's an easy drop. It's no problem. Like, I love taking a chance on a Soler because his upside, we know what it is. We've seen what it is. It's pretty glorious at this point in the draft. So, yep. Big fan with you on that one. Tommy Edman, ADP 162. He's always an enigma of mine. He's like 13 homers, 27 steals. Like, you can almost pencil these stats in.
You don't like the guy.
The runs dropped tremendously last year. 69, he only played 137 games compared to usual. 47 RBIs, 248 average dropped as well. Was battling injuries. Matt Thompson expects him to be the everyday center fielder in St. Louis because the rest of their outfielders can't play center field. He was very, very honest and open about that one. So he expects Edman to play every day out there. Unless Mason Wynn struggles, then Edman can go to shortstop and Mason Wynn gets sent down. Regardless, Edman will play pretty much every day, hitting about seventh in that lineup, though. That's the thing. He won't be hitting near the top. So I'm still pretty much out on Edman, but in a DC with that flexibility, it's pretty nice. I understand the appeal there.
I'm kind of in wait-and-see mode with Tommy Edman, and I don't know if Matt touched on this in your pod, but like the wrist injury really, wrist surgery, I should clarify, really kind of scares me right now to where like Edman is maybe not ready for spring training, and we know how wrists and like that can get ugly. From a strict like projection and playing time and stolen base standpoint, Tommy Edman, I think, is a pretty decent buy. I just I worry about the wrist. I really worry about the wrist. I know Tommy Edman isn't a power hitter, but if he has like zero power, that from a real life standpoint, that could be an easy bat to bench. So I worry about that. But otherwise, I mean, if the wrist checks out, like I feel like this is a good buy. This is someone who is, again, from the projections, like a pretty good batting average, great stolen base source, plays everywhere, and is a non-zero power. Like I much prefer that. I would actually prefer Edman to TJ Friedl, who's going earlier.
I'll buck back on that one.
Assuming we're not doing a bet on it because I don't know what Edman's wrist is. But if Edman was healthy, I'd take him over Friedl.
Yeah, we'll remember that one come March. Because that's on the board. Cedric Mullins.
Do we have a board? Or do I need to like?
We'll figure.
Do I need
it
to
out.
Like write on my wall behind
all
me
you? Here? All you amazing listeners. We'll figure it out. Cedric Mullins. This one, I don't know. I can't wrap my head around this one. Is that your board right there? You got it?
I'll just start writing on my wall. It's fine. It's the
I got a lot of white space back here on this wall I can have some fun with. Cedric Mullins is a conundrum to me because it was a couple of years ago. He was great. You know, Justin Mason's 30-30 season, but then he went 16-34. And then last year, 15-19 in 116 games, hit .233. He is 100% in a platoon. He does not play against lefties, so that will hinder him. The speed's like that. You can't deny the speed. I'm not going to say that at all. But the overall power games played, like all the projection sites have him for 140 games. And if he's in a strict platoon, I have a hard time seeing 140 games. So I can't get behind a Mullins that's not playing enough, especially with the guy going right after him in this draft.
This is my Braxton Garrett. This is my Braxton Garrett.
The max pick, huh? Max pick?
The men. So, sorry. Yeah.
I always screw it up.
The earliest, we should say. If you look on, the NFBC has their ADP, but then their min and their max, the earliest and latest. So Mullins, like 163 ADP. There is a min that says 46 next to it. And yeah, guess who that is? That's this guy.
Yeah.
Back in October. Or no, August. Jesus, when we had the Rob DiPietro, whatever draft, meatball draft. So yes, I'm responsible for that. But I think Cedric Mullins is super cheap. I get the platoon thing last year. He did hurt himself in the middle of the season. He had a pretty bad groin strain that I wonder affected his second half or not. I just think this is a guy with a couple years of a pretty good track record. And even into the first half of 2023, Mullins had 9 home runs, 13 steals, and hit .240. Not like fantastic, but not bad. I feel like this is someone with a 2.5-year track record that's getting discounted for the way he finished 2023, potentially hurt. So I realize there's a floor here where it could drop and you're getting a part-time player. But I think Mullins is a pretty sweet buy where he's going. I like the bounce back potential. I was just saying with Edmund, like, this is a non-zero power bat who's going to get you steals. Again, assuming the playing time is there, and also isn't going to hurt you in batting average. And again, we're at 163 in the draft. There are not too many guys after this that are able to do that. So I'm actually in on Mullins at this price. I think the price is pretty cheap.
I wouldn't say he's a non-zero power bat. I think he's got more power than Tommy Edman. I'd be willing to go to bat on that one. So
yeah,
we'll see where that goes. But this next guy is very appealing to me, and maybe I'm buying into the hype too much on this one, but I've liked Jarren Duran for a while. I know he was a waiver wire pickup a year or two ago that I was a fan of, and much, much more. And this last year with Mr. Duran, his age 26 season, I'll remind people of that. 8 homers, 24 steals, .295 average in 102 games. Should be the everyday center fielder. Should even lead off with Alex Verdugo out of the way. So, like, to me, maybe I'm biased, I think the projections are pretty low on Jarren Duran. I like the upside of Jarren Duran. I take Duran over the last two guys we just talked about. So what's your thoughts on Jarren Duran?
Probably my second favorite buy outside of Seiya Suzuki. So I'm on board with you, man. And actually, so I'm using the HQ, Baseball HQ, and the BatX projections on my little sheet here. They actually love Duran. Duran's the 102nd hitter off the board, projected to finish 66th. Had an upside projection in the forecaster of, I think, 15 homers, 40 steals. I get there's some strikeout issues, and there's not like a whole lot of pop. But you made the case for him quite well, so I'm not going to rehash those points. But I just think leading off in Boston, and I don't even think, like, he'll definitely lead off against righties. I think they gave him a shot against lefties. Who else?
They want his glove out there.
Yep. I mean, and who else? I mean, sorry to piss off the Red Sox fans, but like, they're not that deep.
You know, the top of their order is good, but it goes pretty quick after that.
Yeah. So I really like Jarren Duran where he's going. I would be all over him, and I am.
Yep, I think that's a good one to do that with. Wyatt Langford, your 39th outfielder off the board, ADP 171, the second prospect on this show that has not seen a pitch in the majors that we're talking about on the top 40 outfielders. It's like people probably already are mad at me because they know what I'm going to say in this scenario. Yeah. But, you know, he was great in the minors. Not going to deny that. Really good. He went from the literally rookie ball through A, double A, triple A. Went through four levels at his age 21 season. He'll be 22 next year. He had 10 total home runs and 12 stolen bases over 27, 39, 44 games, which is good. But again, it was literally like, how fast could we get him through the minors? I'm going to take a step back on that one and watch and see.
Agreed. And I don't even know if he makes the opening day roster, to be honest with you. Like, Texas's outfield is pretty set right now. So they'd have to, the replacement level is quite high. So I think, and given the rapid ascent that you were just talking to, Bubba, like, I don't know, this could go south quickly. That said, I mean, Wyatt Langford is a consensus top five prospect. So I get it. It's interesting that Jackson Churio's going like 20 picks ahead. I'd rather have, I think, Churio.
I think Churio's more locked into the job on opening day.
Agreed. But I don't think Langford starts on opening day. And then depending on your league format or whatever, that's a roster spot that you're just holding and holding. Like, what if he's not up through April? What if it's mid-May? You've got some injuries. Like, are you still holding on to him? I don't know. I'm not taking him. Taking him.
I'm with you. I will be 100% cool if he proves me wrong. I just don't see where the path is, because with Leody, with Evan Carter, who will platoon, but Adelis Garcia, you don't want to DH Wyatt Langford.
No, like, you don't want to DH.
You DH Adelis, okay, maybe if you want to, but. There's just so many moving parts there. Injuries will happen, which will help with this. But at the same time, like, you're going to project injuries now to project playing time. Like, that's like, good luck. Get your Ouija board out if you want, or magic eight ball, whatever you want. Like, it's just, that's complicated as all get up. So, I just wait and see on that one and see where it goes.
The one, the case, not to, just before we move on, the case for Langford is if you do give him a full season of plate appearances,
it's awesome.
It's pretty sick. It's pretty sick.
Okay, but we say that, but how do we know?
Yes.
Like I said, he went from rookie ball to triple A, played less than 50 baseball games last year.
It's very hard to project.
It's doable. Don't get me wrong, but my God, how do you project that? That's my hardest part, looking at the projection site. It's like, and they've said it, Cardi, Ariel, they've all said projecting rookies is the hardest thing to do. Like, it's because you have no idea. There's so many layers to it. Guys like develop at different stages. Yeah, this is just supporting the case why we just kind of sit back and watch on these ones. Like, give me the guys going right before him or right after him that we've seen at least do it for a couple of years. And this next guy I like a lot. That might be foolish. I've been told that many times in my life. But Chaz McCormick has an ADP of 175. Last year in 115 games with 22-19 with 70 RBIs, hitting .273. They only have most projection sites. Like the Bad X came out, 129 games. ATC, 129 games. They got him for about 17 to 20 homers, 14-15 steals. A .250 average is a big drop-off from .273. If you want to take the batting average drop-off, that's fine. But the power speed, I think, is very, very legit. And he's supposed to play every day, like relatively every single day. So that's why the 129 games I don't really adjust to. So what I like about Chaz is it's a 2020 guy at pick 175. I think he is a 2020 guy. I could be wrong. Tell me I'm wrong, and I'll accept that.
No, I think you're right.
That's why I don't understand the ADP. I don't understand the ADP. He's almost, if you look at the projections, if you say 2020 but keep the batting average and whatnot, he's Randy Arozarena, folks.
Yeah, he is. I mean, the reason he's cheaper is there's no track record. And yep. So, like, there's that. But, he did. McCormick did 2020 last year in 457 plate appearances. Uh-huh. So even if you bake in a fallback, which is likely, but, like, I think it's going to be gentle. The barrel rate was fantastic for Chaz McCormick. He had a total green light. In Houston, I mean, new manager in town, like, will that happen again? I don't know, but probably. And I, like you were saying, this is the year that Chaz gets that full-time shot. Houston is not very deep. You mentioned your boy earlier, John Singleton. I mean, he's on the bench. There's literally a guy I've never heard of, Gray Kessinger.
Yeah.
Sounds like an author from like 1865. He's on Houston's bench. Like, there's just not much competition for Chaz McCormick in the outfield right now. And so I think the playing time's safe. The Arozarena comp is very interesting. I get it. And 140 picks later, Chaz McCormick, is bolded on my sheet, we'll just say.
Yeah, I have a lot of shares already wherever I can get him. He's on my squads.
And I think we'll probably talk about this next group of outfielders next show. Yep. I feel like there is a legitimate Grand Canyon-sized cliff after Chaz McCormick in drafts right now at 175. Mm-hmm. So, like, get your Chaz.
Yep, get your Chaz, be happy. Like, if you can get a Chaz, a Randy, and just one other, like, decent 4.5 category guy, that sets you up for some massive success on your teams. And, like, that's the art of building a team. It's the fun part of drafting, but it's also an art because it's not that simple. But that goes a long way if you can do it. Like, Chaz is ADP 175 in a 15-team league. It's in the middle of round 11 right now. In a 12-team league, it's round 14.5. Give or take. So if you think about it that way, let's say in a 15-team league, around 11 or 12, you want to have at least four outfielders. It's tough to do. It's very tough.
Tough to do.
I could live with three if you have like a Chaz or Randy and someone else, that, like, those kind of stables. But if you have some kind of holes in the profiles, that's why I wanted to point out the round we're talking about, because ADP is one thing, but you're talking round, because it does start getting crazy as we go down this list here. And it happens every year at the outfield, I guess, but it's more of a, you're getting two to three category guys here pretty soon. And then then at least my flaw potentially is I'll start drafting and I'll be like, oh, you know what? Two to three guys. Well, I can go get a four category middle infielder right now. When in reality, I should probably take the two to three category outfielder before it goes to become a one to two category outfielder. And that's why doing all the drafts we do early kind of points those things out to us.
Yep. Very well said.
Any final thoughts on the 21 through 40 before we do some listeners came through with some good listener questions this week?
Yeah, a lot of really good listener questions. So let's get to those. But no, a lot of, I mean, honestly, like good number of targets here. More than I thought I would, we would uncover so far through two episodes. So yeah, we'll finish out outfield next show with some more pocket stuff. But I don't know, a good number of names that I think we're both pretty high on in this range.
One last McCormick nugget. If you stack on Underdog and you're on the back end of the 12 teams and you get a Tucker or Jordan early, you can get a Bregman like two rounds later, and then you wait and get McCormick later. It's a nice little three-man stack. Just going to throw it out there to you.
Then you got to root for Houston, man.
I root for my fantasy teams, Bloomfield. Very simple game we play here. You tell me you're not going to draft a Houston stack if it falls to you in a regular draft because you don't want to root for Houston?
No, I can't. Exactly. I cannot argue with you on this, even though as much as I like to try and pick fights with you.
The last thing I want to ask before we do listener questions. So like I said, let's just say round 12. Let's say McCormick ends round 12. That's what we're talking here. And you're in a 15-team league. How many outfielders do you want to get?
Like how many, like what number is McCormick?
No, do you want to have at least three outfielders? Do you like how, for you to feel comfortable about your squad, what's like your, like obviously things change, drafts change, things change. What's your goal?
I mean, realistically, it'd be my third one.
Okay.
Because you can't in 15 teamers, you can't have McCormick as your fourth and have two closers at that point and have two aces and have
that's tough. Yeah. At least one catcher, although those kids.
Yeah, three catchers for Bubba's team.
Yeah,
you can't have all that
because then you get stuck with like Nick Fortes if you start punting and stuff. It's crazy.
Rene Pinto is the name.
Rene Pinto. Yeah, it's not pretty. But all right. Listener questions, as like I said, y'all came through in a big way for us here. We'll kick it off with Doink Town Danny. Best OBP gyms in this range. Any fellas who get on base and also hit fat doinks. Love you guys. Thanks for entertaining my winter fantasy baseball degeneracy. Okay, Schwarber's the easy one, Bloomfield. Let's go past Schwarber. Who's your next?
Oh, come on. That's who I was going to say, man.
He doinks it all over the place. Doing? He's the Schwarbomb Schwarb doinks. Who else you got here in the OBP department? There are a few of them.
I'll say Evan Carter. So for as much as I kind of crapped on Carter for being a better real life player than not, Evan Carter's patience can very much be rewarded in OBP leagues. I'll go Evan Carter.
I will go with Ian Happ. Dude walked 14% of the time last year. He usually has at least 10% plus walk rate.
I didn't know it was that high. Jeez. Yeah,
he walked a ton last year.
360 OBP for Ian Happ last year.
Wow. So, Ian Happ, my dude, in this range for your OBP doinkness. Doink Town Danny has another question. Do you guys have a favorite go-to projection system?
Yes, I have two. Well, really three, but I use for my stats. I use the Baseball HQ projections, which. Yes, I do work for the site, but I'm also involved very much in how those projections are made. I think it's a great blend of an algorithm plus human intervention, I should say, from both a playing time and like a skills validation check. And I combine that with the BatX for my hitters. For pitchers, I project myself. I think pitcher projections are very difficult given how fast pitchers can change. So I project those all manually. And a shout out to the ATC projections that we're using on this site. The ATC projections, for those who aren't aware, is more of an aggregation of quote unquote original projection systems. So ATC kind of takes an average or an aggregate of multiple projection systems based on how they have done in the past, weights them differently, all that stuff. You know, any of those three steamers, fine. Try and combine two of them just so you don't get like crazy outliers. But that's what I use.
Yep. I'm a BatX / ATC guy. That's where I'm usually going. But I got to start using some HQ ones. I haven't really gotten into those yet. But as you guys know, no one has caveman projections. BP @futures_bet. Jaron Duran, is it crazy to think he can go 20, 40, defense good enough for him to get everyday playing time in the Boston outfield and get the at-bats? Thanks. You said HQ thinks so.
Yeah, maybe not 20 bombs. I don't know if the power is there for that, but could definitely do 40 bags for sure. He sold 24 in 360 plate appearances last year. So,
yeah, there could be like 115 runs scored and 40 stolen bases with some little bit of pop in an average. Like, there's a lot to like with Jaron Duran. Brock Tyson asks, over under 7.5 stolen bases for Kerry Carpenter. I know he doesn't have the minor league track record, but 70 sprint speed and all 6 stolen bases in the last 2 months of the season without being picked off. I'll take the over.
What was the over under at?
7.5.
7.5. Yeah, he was perfect. I'll still go the under. I don't think he's that fast. As much as I hate to hate on a fellow Virginia Tech grad. Where's it at? Where's it at? Kerry Carpenter. I'll take the under. However, Kerry Carpenter, we didn't get to him. We'll probably talk about him next week. Love the power batting average combo.
Yep, for sure. Everybody, Thomas Travato asks, at what point would you want to have all 3 starting outfielders in a 3 outfielder, 1 utility league? It's 16 teams, 24 players. That's a whole lot of draft picks there. You need 3 outfielders. 16 teams
and 3 outfielders.
Yeah.
So that's what, 48?
And 4 utilities. Let's just say 4 just for fun. 4 times 16, 64. We just went over 40.
Yeah.
I think you can wait a while.
I think you can wait too. I think you want to maybe grab a couple outfielders. Just 2 guys that we've talked about here. But for that last one, because, I mean, invariably you're going to need a boatload at other position in a 16-teamer. That's tough.
Scarcity elsewhere will take over.
Yep.
The reason why we say outfield scarcity is most of us play 5 outfielder leagues. That's where it gets scarce. If this was a 3 outfield position, I would not be nearly as concerned with what's going on.
Yeah.
Brant Chesser, congrats on your nomination as well for continuing series in fantasy baseball.
Yes.
That was a big one. Which speed source do you prefer, Mullins, Edmund, or Duran? Thanks you for the pod. I think we can agree on this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go Duran, Mullins, Edmund. But I think all 3 great options, and they're all – it's a great question because they're all the same exact ADP in the mid-160s. That's how I'd go. I know you'd have Edmund last. Edmund could move up to 2nd ahead of Mullins
if he's healthy. If he's healthy, I'd have him over Mullins. I just worry about Mullins' platoon situations. Could be overthinking it. But
you've been talking to Curlin too much. No.
We all listen to Curlin talk. We don't talk to Curlin. There's a difference in that one. But yeah, I got Duran first for sure.
Do we listen to Curlin talk?
I'm not gonna say anything. Quick second question from BP. Who is the 2024 AL Rookie of the Year, and why is it Wyatt Langford? Thanks again. I'm going to be totally honest. I don't even know who's eligible for Rookie of the Year right now. I haven't even gotten that far in my baseball looks, but Langford's near the top. I know that much.
Sorry, Curly. I'm just joking, man.
No, you're not. Stop it.
What was the question? AL Rookie of the Year?
Yeah, why is it Wyatt Langford? Yeah. I don't even know who else is going to be eligible right now.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm bored about that. Give me 1 second, actually. Let me pull up DK Sports. But
I was just going to look up AL Rookie of the Year odds.
Yeah, baseball.
It's funny that so I just Googled it. It's posted on MLB.com.
That's ironic. Rookie of the Year. I got you right here. Jackson Holliday, Wyatt Langford, Junior Caminero, Colt Keith, who got his extension. Those are your 4 – or no – it goes Holliday, Evan Carter, Langford, Nolan Schnall from Anaheim, Caminero, Parker Meadows still qualifies, Colt Keith, Willier Abreu. Those are your top 8. If you want to go 10, Kierstead and Everson Pereira. There's other farther ones down the list, but there's better options than I thought on that one.
I'll go Langford.
If he's up there right away, he got a chance.
I don't even think he needs to be up right away. Like, I don't know.
You're probably right.
These other guys. I mean, Colt Keith will be up, I guess, but I'll agree with the question and say it is.
He's 6-1 odds. He's the 3rd best odds. For fun, he's just boring, but he'll play every day at the top of the order. I'll say Parker, but he's just boring, but he'll play every single day.
You just drafted him in our FPAS draft.
He's great for that format. You know, Sedane Raffaello is down there at 40-1, but he's not going to play every day because they got Tyler O'Neill, so that sucks. But, man, I guess Langford. I don't know. This is tough because I want to say Evan Carter because he'll be there out the gate, but Langford's better than Evan Carter. So we'll see how that plays out. Dynasty Junkies says any late Dylan Cruz interest. It's got to be late. We talked to Lauren Arbach about him, and they said he'll be up eventually, but when, where, how is a lot of questions with Washington.
And I trust Lauren on that. So, yeah, that's tough.
That's my two cents, but I could be wrong. But in a late DC.
Yeah, it depends how many lates. But
because if you're looking at ADP of late, his ADP is 530. He's gone 435 to 628. If you get that 600 range and you are someone that takes prospects, I could see it. I'll say that much.
And I do talk a lot about timing with your DCs. Like it is helpful, valuable to have someone who you think will be up in either from injury or a call up in August, because your starting lineup right now in a DC will look nothing like it will in August. So
and Cruz is good. Cruz is good. Just more seasoning and getting the chance. Eric Samulski, congratulations as usual. Because he's on the Roto World podcast. Where does Wyatt Langford play? Outfield seems set with Garcia, Carter, Leody. The Rangers have hinted they don't want to call Langford up to DH. The ADP is so high, but isn't it just as likely a guy like Justin Foscue gets a shot to DH out the gate? We agree with you, Eric.
Yeah, that's basically what we said earlier. Yeah. So good to be on Eric's side. Smart guy.
Yep. I don't know where he plays, and that's the holdup at the moment, but we've seen prospects in a spring training force the hand. So keep an eye on those scenarios.
And injuries.
Our buddy Ed DeCaria, really good writer over at Baseball HQ. So the average team's second and third outfielders will come from this list. Cool. He's being sarcastic, but yeah, it's pretty right. Right on the number there.
Ed, man, come on. Not a bad crop. You can go shopping for some Suzuki, some Teoscar, some Santander. You go in the express lane and get Cedric Mullins, Jaron Duran, all kinds of options here. I like it.
All right. Michael C. has a question for us. Who are your favorite breakouts values after 150? I like Chaz. Could do what Lane did 4 to 5 rounds later. We love Chaz. Nimmo, boring, but average runs should be big. By what point do you want 4 outfielders? Very latest for me is Nootbaar at 200. Congrats again on the FSWA nomination. Yeah, so he wants 4 outfielders by pick 200.
Yep, which is doable. I mean, we'll talk about some of these guys next week. We mentioned Carpenter real quick. Actually, I think Dalton Varsho.
Yes, he's growing on me.
Yeah, especially if you have a batting average cushion built up, I think you can go 25-15 or something from Varsho. So
yeah, Varsho's growing on me. Christopher Morel, they've really like who the hell? Council. He said, we're going to do everything we can to find a spot for him to play every day. If he has to rotate a platoon, whatever, he's going to play every day because he wants that batting lineup. That's ridiculous. Ooh, power with some speed. Yeah. Like, that's a ton of power and speed. And Tyler O'Neill, at the ADP, I keep looking at him. It's interesting to me. That's all I can say. But yeah, I'm with you. By pick 200, I'd love to have at least 4. I'll say that much for sure in that scenario.
And much more to come on this group next week.
We'll hit up all these guys and much, much more. The goal is to get close to ADP or the overall top 100 by the time it's all said and done. Different format next week. Bloomboard might be a little tough to go by next week, but we'll get you guys covered. Final thoughts on the episode, Mr. Bloomfield, as we wrap up episode 103. First episode as FSWA nominated podcast host.
Yep. Congrats again, my friend. And we will get the ball rolling on these auction leagues. They're very, like I said, we've confirmed the dates. We'll get the survey out, and we'll start getting some leagues filled up. So I can't wait for that. It's gonna be a blast.
Yeah, this time next month, all 4 drafts will be completed. So,
that's pretty
crazy to think about, folks. It's gonna be rocking and rolling here. So
first drafts led in less than 3 weeks. So
yep. So it'll be a lot of fun. Again, if you're still interested, let us know, but I'll try to get the survey stuff done here in the next day or two. get that out to y'all so you can get that filled out, and we'll like lock in everybody and get the trash talking to its fullest and best potential along the way. But until Thursday, when we'll be back, guys, to wrap up the outfield position, you can check out Ryan on the Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Intrick. This is Bubba and the Bloom, episode 103. Catch you all next time.